This is 91.7 WVXU and Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Purcell. As the nation marks Veterans Day in the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, a new beginning for remembering the role Cincinnati played in the First World War. Cincinnati institutions are pulling together for a year-long series of citywide events spearheaded by the Cincinnati Opera and Artistic Director Evans Mirages. Evans will be here to tell you about Cincinnati Remembers World War I later on Cincinnati Edition. It all begins this evening with a concert downtown featuring the Cantus Vocal Ensemble. First on Cincinnati Edition, writer and photographer John Katz. It's always a pleasure to share a conversation with this talented gentleman who has 25 books to his credit, including The Dogs of Bedlam Farm, A Dog Year, and Rose in a Storm. In previous visits, he's enlightened and amazed us with tales of dog behavior and dog training, and for the first time, you'll have a chance to ask him questions and pass along comments, too, by calling 513-419-7100, emailing talk@wvxu.org, posting on Facebook, or tweeting at 917WVXU. John Katz's new book, which hits the street tomorrow, is The Second Chance Dog, a love story, which shares the tale of Frida, the dog who kept men away. On the phone from Bedlam Farm in upstate New York, John Katz, welcome back to Cincinnati Edition.
It's good to talk to you again, Mark. I feel like, you know, talking with you is an annual event. You've been a witness to the whole saga, I think.
And quite a saga. I was surprised at, John, how much I missed when I read The Second Chance Dog and saw there had been quite a bit going on in your life in the last few years. And, you know, in your previous books, you've introduced readers to your dogs, Rose and Izzy and Lenore, the love hound there, as well as other animals at Bedlam Farm. But this time, it's someone else's dog that you introduce. I mean, a dog that still plays an important role in your life. Please introduce to listeners Frida.
Frida, well, it's spectacular to talk about Frida. Frida is a lot of dog. Frida is the kind of dog I think I have successfully avoided my entire life. She is a Rottweiler Shepherd mix. She's a big dog, black and white, and she's had quite a checkered life. She was purchased by a disreputable breeder in the Adirondacks as a junkyard dog and a guard dog, and was kind of trained roughly to be very aggressive around fences and all that. Then she got herself pregnant. She got loose and got pregnant, and the owner that took her up on the New York State Thruway and threw her out into the Adirondacks and abandoned her there. And this probably would have done in a lesser dog than Frida, but Frida survived for 3 or 4 years in the Adirondacks, hunting and eating and God knows doing what. And she made her way back south a bit to Glens Falls area, where she hung around a community college, ACC. And the kids fed her and kind of watched her and knew she was there. And the SPCA began a year-long effort to catch her. When she thwarted just about every trick they had, finally they drugged a stake, I think, with sedatives and got her that way. And then she languished in the shelter for nearly a year, when all sorts of reasonable people came in and decided not to take her home until my wife, Maria, wandered in there, not my wife at the time, and thought she was adorable and took her home. And the shelters basically said, just take her. You don't have to fill out any forms. We don't care if you have a fence. Just go right out the door with her. So she did. And then right after that, I met them. And Maria and I both were in quite a bit of transition. We both were married at the time. We got divorced. And I met Maria. I was looking for some from barn windows, which she had. And Frida nearly took the door down when I came in. And that's my introduction to her. So she's quite a dog. She caught a deer, I should tell you, last year in the backyard.
Yes.
She didn't kill it. She just kind of ran it down and sat on it. And I realized right away that I was starting to fall in love with Maria, and Maria wasn't coming if I didn't figure out how to deal with Frida. So a personal challenge, and then again a dog challenge, probably the greatest dog challenge of my life. And I call her the hell dog, Frida. She's a lot of dog.
Well, from the stories,
that's the basic primer to Frida.
Wait, the stories you tell in The Second Chance Dog do paint her as quite the hell dog, because she is very aggressive. And is that what you mean by the dog you've avoided or you know, escaped most of your life, that Rottweiler, you know, Shepherd mix?
Yes.
That they all have the bad reputation.
Well, you know, they're not bad. Certainly not bad dogs. I don't mean that, but you know, they're if they're not really raised well and bred well, They can be a handful, and I've never wanted to have dogs that people are afraid of. And also, the dog like that, who had been through so much, is just quite a training challenge. And you just never know if you're really up to that. And also, you know, she's a dog that does have the power to do a lot of damage. You know, if she can catch a deer, she can do a lot of other things. So I just wasn't sure. You know, I didn't really have in my training repertoire a lot of experience. You know, my dogs mostly have come from breeders. And, you know, as you know, they're good dogs. I mean, I have the love dog. I write children's books about her. So I just hadn't had any experience with a dog like that. And I was afraid of it. On the other hand, I was very motivated because I could not imagine. I didn't want Maria to even have to think about letting Frida go. I called them. They were like Thelma and Louise, those two. They were both kind of two man-hating bandits loose in the world. They just adore each other. And they really took care of each other. And Frida was just a total pussycat around Maria. But she has enormous amount of prey drive, and which obviously saved her life in the Adirondacks. She would bolt, go through a fence, and get a raccoon or something, or baby rabbits or chickens. And when she went after something, she brought it home. So that's just a lot of dog. I think I'd never have encountered that before.
Well, in your previous books, you've talked a lot about the job that dogs have. And I was just saying that Rottweilers and Shepherds sometimes have a bad reputation. I'm not saying they're bad dogs, but you've spoken before about how for most dogs, it's the people who make the dogs the way they are.
Well, that's right, especially people who train guard dogs and people who misuse dogs like pit bulls, for example, and turn them into guard animals or fighting dogs. And, you know, the general public has really no way of knowing who are the good dogs, who are not, who are the good people and who are not. So, you know, it's frightening to people. They don't know how to make those judgments. And a lot of those dogs are mishandled and misbred and mistreated. And some of their tougher instincts are encouraged. This, of course, is what happened to Frida. You know, through my blog, I was actually able to recreate Frida's life, which is unusual for a dog like that. And I actually found the place where she'd live, and the woman who owned the dog, who owned her. Her husband had died, the one who abandoned her in the Adirondacks. And, you know, she was really trained very roughly. They would bang on the fence and throw things at her to get her excited. And one of the interesting, really amazing things I came across in researching this was there was a young boy in the neighborhood who would come at night and would feed her. He would give her food through the fence. And they just formed this great bond. And one of the things I came across was one night there was a fire in his house. Where he was right next door to the junkyard. And Frida made so much noise, it woke up his parents. And they got all the kids out of the house, like within seconds of the fire engulfing the place. I took her back to meet him and to see him and his mother. So here's this dog who, you know, who was really raised roughly, trained roughly, bred roughly, formed this attachment with this boy and ended up saving his life. I'm sure not consciously, maybe so, but probably not. And then when she saw him on the street, she just went over, rolled on her back and just wanted to be petted. So she had that in her, that affection.
But didn't have that affection for you, because I have to say, this is well into the book after you have, spent $500 worth of beef jerky trying to win her over, and where she's barking at you, where she barks at the UPS delivery drivers, bicycles, and cars, trucks, motorcycles, anything that goes by a fence, very much a boundary dog, and that guard dog that you were talking about.
Well, yes, that was a tough round for me. You know, we had to keep Frida in the barn across the street for almost a year because she would go after my dogs and was just crazy around animals, the farm animals, the sheep, people walking by, people walking with dogs. And you know, Frida's a very intimidating dog. She's a big, powerful dog. And so I began what I call the beef jerky campaign, that I would go. I had a big bag of beef jerky. I would open the barn door, throw some in, and then run. And we did that for a month or two. And gradually, I was able to get into the barn, get closer to her. You know, I had to be much more patient than my nature really calls for. I'm not that patient a person, and I'm easily frustrated, and I don't have a great attention span. But I knew if this was going to work, I had to really change. I had to really be better. And I figured out a dog like Frida, if you give this dog beef jerky every day and don't bother her, eventually she's going to come to like you because that's what dogs are like. And that's sort of what happened, really. I was very influenced. I started doing a lot of research. I read about prey drive. And the worst parts of prey drive have been bred out of dogs like my lab, Lenore, or the border collies, who will have three or four of the prey drive steps. They'll run, chase, but they won't grab or kill. But this has not been bred out of Frida, and those are two breeds that still have a lot of prey drive that had been encouraged in her. So I actually was very influenced by reading about Helen Keller and her teacher Annie Sullivan, who wrote about how obedience is the key to learning, and that once she got Helen Keller's attention, she was able to teach her how to read and see and write. And so that was in my mind when I dealt with Frida. I actually, when she was pulled me off a path, almost into the woods, I kicked her really by accident. I just kicked her out of a panic to stop her. And that began to transform our relationship. She looked at me in this most shocked way, like, "Oh my God, I have to pay attention to him now." And she began paying attention to me. And that was the window through which I was able to widen our relationship, begin to teach her basic commands, sit and stay, begin to reinforce her with food. And it was all positive. Nothing bad was happening between. I wasn't yelling at her or demanding anything of her or being tense around her. I guess I was a little tense. So over the course of a year, my goal was to get her into the house by Christmas Eve as a present for Maria. And Maria was very upset that, it was upstate New York, cold winters. We had to haul wood out to the barn and a wood stove to keep her warm all night. And so she hated having her in the house. And I was really also was kind of stumped because I went so far with her, but I couldn't really get her to be appropriate around the dogs. I was really worried about what would happen if she got into the house. And then one night I had this dream that I was in the Adirondacks, running the Adirondacks with her, and she was waiting for me at the end of a field. And I heard this voice. I said to her, "What can I do? What else can I do to make you listen to me, to calm you down?" And I heard this voice say, "Trust me." It wasn't Frida's voice, it was some other voice. And I realized that was the one thing that I hadn't done. I didn't really trust her. So on Christmas Eve, I just walked her into the house, closed my eyes, took a deep breath. And she looked at my dogs. They were all standing there, everybody's growling at each other. And she saw the wood stove, went over to it, and lay down. And that was the key somehow. Just giving her the chance to succeed. And I guess I had calmed her down enough, and she made a choice, I think. I think we get the dogs we need, and Maria needed Frida to protect her and be the protector. And then when Maria really needed her to be something else, I think she somehow picked up on that and changed.
John
She was
Katz.
great.
It was quite a story. John Katz, the writer, talking about the Second Chance Dog, a love story. Available in bookstores beginning tomorrow. He's on the phone from Bedlam Farm up in upstate New York. More from John about his new book, which goes on sale tomorrow, coming up on Cincinnati Edition after a short break. And you have a chance to be part of the conversation by calling 513-419-7100. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU and 88.5 WMUB. I'm Mark Purcell. John Katz is joining me on the phone from Bedlam Farm in upstate New York, discussing his new book, The Second Chance Dog, A Love Story. It's about the Rottweiler Shepherd mix named Frida, companion to the artist Maria Wolf. John and Maria had sparked a friendship, but Frida, fiercely protective Maria, didn't take to John very well. On sale tomorrow, the book is a heartwarming memoir about how animals can make us better people. Now it's never too late to find love. You can be part of the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. And John, in The Second Chance Dog, you're really no nonsense about dog training, and you call out some popular celebrity dog trainers and, reinforce what you've said before, that not one training fits all dogs or not one training fits all people either.
Well, yes, it's one of the the training theories that I've developed, you know, I worry about the what I call the guru culture, the idea that everybody's looking in the dog world for one guru who has all the answers. And there aren't just one set of answers for people. You know, dog training is very personal, it's very spiritual, it's very individual. Everybody's different, every dog is different, every environment is different, and there isn't one approach that works for all of them. You know, I don't use those books. You know, I feel the best training comes from ideas from the owner who knows the dog and thinks about it. I think the system of training in America has made people feel really dumb about training. Everybody thinks it's something they can't do. They have to go to classes and they have to talk to $30, buy $30 books. And, you know, classes are great. I'm not, you know, trainers are great and can be very helpful. But I think that every breakthrough, I've had really good luck with dogs, good luck in training them. And I really just do it as with Frida, by recognizing their animal nature and by figuring out what they love and what they don't love and what works. And that really, I think, saved Frida's hide as well as mine. You know, I think the whole culture has pushed the idea that you have to buy a lot of other expert opinions to know what to do, when I think the real answers almost always lie in the individual dog owner and lover.
Cincinnati Edition, Jennifer from downtown on the phone, talking with John Katz here on Cincinnati Edition. Good afternoon, Jennifer.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
You're
Hi,
welcome.
Jennifer.
Hi. My question is, okay, my dog, he's 8 years old. I got him at a puppy rescue when he's 2 months old. He's always had some issues. I don't know what his history was before I got him. He and I have been through quite a bit together, some difficulties. My question is, do you know if dogs happen to suffer post-traumatic stress disorder? And I will take my answer off the air.
Well, thank you for your call, Jennifer. And boy, if anybody, Frida would be kind of a case study in that, John.
Well, I think it's, you know, I think what dogs' emotional lives are different than humans. You know, I think they experience things differently. You know, animals shake off trauma really literally. Often when a dog or a donkey shakes, they shake off anxiety, they shake off trouble. You know, and I think there's a real focus in the country right now on the idea of the rescue dog, the abused dog. And I think we can go overboard somewhat with that idea. It certainly happens. But, you know, dogs are profoundly adaptable. If you look at the Katrina dogs or the millions of dogs that are rehomed every year, the vast majority of them just move on. And I think it's, you know, it's risky. I don't refer to Frida as a rescue dog. You know, she certainly had her challenges, but with the proper training, she's fine. You know, she really is obedient. She doesn't hurt anybody. She, you know, she's really behaved very, very well. So I'd be careful about that. I mean, I think dogs certainly can be traumatized, as any animal can be. But I think it tends to be the first thing people assume. You know, everybody I meet has an abused dog. And if you look at the studies on abuse, it's just not that prevalent. It happens. But most dogs in America have pretty good lives, probably better lives than any animals in the world have. So I would just be cautious about assuming that's a problem. You know, and it's not, and it can cloud training, because, you know, if I saw Frida as a crippled, traumatized thing, I would not have been able to train her. You know, I asked her to behave. I expected her to behave in the way that we needed her to do, and she came around to that. So I guess that's my response is to be cautious about that. It can certainly happen, but I think, you know, training is moving forward. The dog doesn't see himself or herself as a rescue or abused creature. They just need clear directions on how to live.
Obedience and love. I think that's what you say in the second chance
and direction,
dog.
And direction. They need to be told this is what you need to do to live safely in our world, because the human world is alien. You know, it's not friendly to dogs. You know, all of the things that dogs love to do, have sex, roll in disgusting stuff, squabble, we don't like them to do. So our definition of a good dog is a dog that stops behaving like a dog and that behaves like we want them to behave. So that's where training comes in. Training is the negotiating this difficult transition from their natural behavior to what they need to do to live well with us. And dogs suffer, you know, when they can't do that. We return them to shelters, we put them down, we get rid of them. But I think that's what I mean when I say training is a very spiritual thing. You know, it's not about obedience. It's about showing the dog how to live in our world. And that's what I needed to do with Frida. I need to say, look, this is what you need to do to live with us, to be with us. You can't hurt other dogs. You can't hurt us. And I projected that very clearly to her, not in words, but in training. So I think training is a very exciting thing. I think it's kind of a mess right now because everybody thinks it's only something, TV stars can do.
John Gatz, the author and photographer, talking about his new book, The Second Chance Dog, A Love Story. You can be part of the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. Lisa from Wilmington is on the line with a question. Good afternoon, Lisa.
Hi, John. Thank you
Hi,
for
Lisa.
Taking my call. I follow you on your blog all the time.
Oh, thank you.
And I wanted to know how Frida got her name. It's kind of an old-fashioned name and a people name, and I have done rescue work with animals, and I always carefully chose the name of each animal, and I wondered how she got her name.
Maria named Frida after Frida Cole, the Mexican artist.
Okay.
Maria's an artist, so that was a person who was very important to her. and that was so she got that name pretty late in life. And, the backdrop of the story, of course, the dog is part of the story. But Maria and I, and Frida, too, were all sort of in trouble at the time we all met. You know, Maria had just gotten divorced. I had just gotten divorced in a 35-year marriage. So we were both in a very painful transition, and Frida was kind of a mess. And what thing had happened with Frida, she was so rambunctious and aggressive and loud. Maria was afraid she would hurt somebody. So she pretty much hid her from the world. She walked her late at night. She walked her in the woods. And she kept her away from people, so Frida never really had the chance to get socialized. So one of the things I really tried to do with her is to get her out into the world and get her around people. And she doesn't like to be touched, but she's otherwise fine. So I think the backdrop of this second chance idea, all three of us were looking for a second chance, and we gave that all to each other. Frida was instrumental in getting me together from Maria because Maria really trusted me when she saw how hard I was working with Frida. She decided that all men weren't jerks, and maybe one of them was worth a shot.
And also, Lisa, it had to do with the eyebrows, too. As you know, that Mexican artist
yes,
has
yes,
a rather
yes,
prominent
exactly.
eyebrow. One.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
That's why as well, too. So, well, thanks for your call, Lisa.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.
Josh from Dry Ridge, Kentucky, this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Josh from Dry Ridge, Kentucky, runs an exotic rescue in Florence and says dogs do retain some trauma and wanted to talk a little bit about that from, the previous caller here, John. Josh, you're on the air.
Hey, Josh.
Hey, how are you?
Good, sir. How are you?
Yes, I run an exotic rescue in northern Kentucky, actually, and I do a lot of work with big birds, and I do dog rescue as well, reptiles. I'm the only fish rescue in the world, that kind of stuff. But I do see a direct correlation. I've gotten a lot of these birds that have had truly traumatic, aggressive keepers, that kind of stuff. It manifests itself over a long period of time. And even some of the dogs that I've taken in have had emotional issues for a long duration. And your expert said that he was recalling how his dog was able to find a way to fall back into a domestic lifestyle. And my question is really, what is it that drives that ability in his mind to just forget and forgive? What is the ability to fall away from these things that have natural instinct says we should be weary of things that have hurt us? And what is it that necessarily would being an animal keeper, I see there's a connection in the eye of the animal. Is there something that makes him say that they have the ability to recoup at the drop of a dime? Or is it that
well,
he really believes that there's
question.
Something that carries through?
Well, Josh, and John, you kind of address that in the book where you talk about how, both dogs and humans, the difference in how they perceive life and time, and how the you say the wheel of life keeps on turning.
Yeah, it's a really good question, and I think it's a complicated question, and there are probably lots of different ideas about it. What I would say to that, I don't know, of course, about other exotic animals, but I think, you know, dogs are, I think the first step is to understand that they're acting out of instinct and not out of memory. And when I say memory, I mean dogs don't have language. They don't have words. So they can't construct narratives like we do, like I'm ticked off because somebody mistreated me and I resent it and I'm depressed about it. Their instincts warn them of danger and warn them of things that will hurt them, and they, I'm sure, retain a keen memory about that instinctively. But they're also great creatures of tradition. And the issue with Frida was a great example. She was used to behaving in an unchecked way. She would chase after things, and her life depended on that. And when something moved, when something approached her, she would go after it. That was her training. That was her instinct. That was her whole life. The challenge for me was to give her a different tradition and to build a different tradition in her. First was obedience, which she did not have. So I did what I call calming training. And my theory is that they would rather be calm than crazy because it feels better. So if you give her beef jerky 50 times a day and have her sit down, she's going to feel good about sitting down. And when she's sitting down, she's going to be calm. And then teaching her to stay, I remember introducing the idea to her that she did not have to chase a truck. She could sit and eat a piece of beef jerky or some other treat instead, or just be patted. So that was an idea she came to like, that she didn't have to be crazy. She didn't have to control the world. She wasn't in charge of everything. The problem, you know, this is, you know, I do this somewhat for a living. I write about dogs, and I was on a farm. Very difficult for me to do this if I were living in a suburb or city, or if I wasn't available to her quite a bit. So I was able around her to check this behavior, to give her alternative behaviors. So I think it's a very complicated thing to do. And of course, in America, you know, a lot of people see getting a dog as a moral decision. They really need to rescue one. They don't want to buy one. I think they don't even think it's right. The problem with that is if you don't know what you're doing and you don't have a lot of time, you know, it's complicated, as our caller knows. You know, rehabilitating, reconditioning an animal takes a long time and a lot of work and a lot of patience and a lot of clarity. So I think Frida has pretty much shed her sense of herself as a crazy dog. You know, I think she looks to us for direction. She's very calm in the house. We take her for a lot of walks. She's no longer busting away to try to kill things. She's still very keen to keep trucks away from the house. And so I'm actually taking her tomorrow to my first reading, the book launch reading here in Cambridge where I live. And so this is going to be a test of our, it could be the first reading where people run screaming from the bookstore. But I'm sure she'll do well. I'm very confident about her. We had an open house on the farm. We had hundreds of people here. I walked her around all afternoon, and she was completely appropriate. So I think it's a great question, but I think, you know, our definition of trauma and their experience of trauma, I just think are not the same thing. We just have to be careful to remember that they're animals. They're not people. They're not children. They don't have our emotions.
John Katz talking about his book, The Second Chance Dog, A Love Story, available in bookstores tomorrow. And by the way, you can visit WVXU.org and find a link to John's book and his blog and more about Bedlam Farm as well. And you can call us, 513-419-7100. Cindy is on the phone to ask about one of your previous books, John. Good afternoon, sure. Cindy.
Hi.
Hi, Cindy.
Hi. I was calling to say hi to John and to tell you I just finished one of your books this morning, and I'm sorry, but the name escapes me. Is it called Going Home?
Yes.
Yes, that's the book about grieving.
About losing a pet?
Right, about grieving a pet.
I'm sorry, I'm not hearing you very well, but
yes,
I'll
that's
try
your book
to
about
going.
How to deal with a loss.
The reason
of a pet.
I was calling was because I lost a pet. I lost a dog that was 12 years old 3 weeks ago today, and she just got sick suddenly with leptospirosis, and it was just horrible. And she had been vaccinated for it, but we lost her. prior to that, we lost a dog in August, and he was 12 and a half. So we lost both of our dogs, and it was very heartbreaking for us to have that. And I guess I just want to say thank you, because the book just meant a lot, being able to take in what you said. And I've really been struggling with the grief. And my brother passed away the very next morning after my dog 3 weeks ago. And he was special needs, and it's just been a hard time, but your book really helped me so much, and I just wanted to tell you thank you.
Well, thank you, Cindy.
Well, thank you. That call means a lot to me. I appreciate that very much. I'm glad it was helpful to you. And I hope you get another dog.
That does help. Does. Yes, thank you, Cindy. Book is very good for helping cope with the loss of a pet, and especially because, as you point out in that book, Going Home, how important a member of the family a lot of our pets become as it goes along. And we're running a little bit shy on time, so I do want to ask you one more thing about the Second Chance Dog. That, you know, in the past, you've really focused and provided invaluable wisdom and insight into my own canine companion, Buckley, and other dogs I encounter day to day. But I have to say, in the Second Chance Dog, the new book, I gained a better understanding of humans, because it's really as much about your struggles and those of Maria, and your coming together and getting the second chance. It's not just the dog that gets the second chance in the new book.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Mark. It is great to talk to you, always.
Well, I want to say thanks for your help with the dogs, and good luck with the Second Chance Dog. One last question. You are not doing a book tour this time. You're focusing on getting the book and spreading the word via social media and the like.
I am. I have a blog, you know, bedlamfarm.com, which now has about 175,000 people a month on it. And I've been working very hard at it. I love the blog. It's very important to me. So I had a meeting with Random House earlier this year, and we decided the most effective way to get a message out about books now, given the struggles bookstores are having and the number of them that are declining, to use my blog. It's a platform. My readers are there. I've been working hard to go where my readers are. You know, I'm not one of those writers who's complaining about the digital revolution. I think this is a golden age of reading. More people are reading more books less expensively and more conveniently than ever before. And this is where they are. They're online. So this is where I need to go. I love book tours. I love traveling around to places like Cincinnati and meeting people, and I still will do some of that. But I think the primary way now for a writer to interact with his readers and get the word out about books is through things like my blog, and I have a Facebook page where the blog feeds onto that. And just today, I'm going to my local bookstore. We have 500 pre-orders for the book, all of which have come from my blog, and I said I would sign them all if they were purchased locally. And that's been a great boon to the bookstore, you know, locally. But the idea of traveling around the country at great expense doesn't seem to work as well anymore. So I'm embracing the future. I mean, I'm into it.
Author
and podcasts, videos. I have a video in the book, by the way, of Frida in her life now. The end of the book ends with a video link on YouTube where people can see Frida as she lives now. So that's a neat thing to be able to do.
Well, thanks for your time, John. Great to talk to you again. Greatly appreciate all you do.
Thank you, Mark, and thank your callers, too.
Author and photographer John Katz, you can visit WVXU.org, find a link to his blog and his new book, The Second Chance Dog, A Love Story. The book will be available tomorrow where books are sold. I'm Mark Purcell, and this is Cincinnati Edition, 91.7 WVXU.